Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Good afternoon, everyone, and happy Tuesday. Welcome to the ICAT Task Force meeting. Just a quick roll call, and then we'll jump right into it. Of the members that have dialed in already, I have Cheryl Turney, Alex Goss, Alexis Snyder, Anil Jain, Arian Malik, Denise Webb, Gus Girardi, Jackie Monson, Jocelyn Keegan, Ram Sriram, and Sasha Termot. Are there any other members that have joined that I did not call?
There are a couple people who are on the, not dialed in there. I see Deb Strickland just joined in the public chat. Looks like Rich Landon. They haven't been looped in yet, and I'm skimming down. Not sure if there are any other members who are still waiting to get bridged in.
Okay. Well, hopefully they can join us on the audio here shortly. We'll have Gabriel to be on the lookout. And Jim as well. Okay, great.
Mm-hmm.
So, Alex, I'll turn it over to you to get us started on our summary and action plan.
Well, thanks so very much, everyone. It's great to have everybody here on Tuesday, April the 7th. We're going to let's start out with a review of the agenda and sort of manage our expectations about where we've come from and where we're headed to. So now that we've completed our necessary roll call and welcome, today is really about first level setting as we really jump into the deep end of the pool with editing the prior authorization table. From there, we'll also, time permitting, move into guiding principles and some ideal state discussions and then wrap it up along with our public comments. So if we could advance the slides, that would be great to keep going. Awesome. Thank you. So at the last meeting, we really evolved from our prior work where we had been developing workflows to help us dissect the prior authorization process as the exemplar for what it might mean to converge or intersect clinical and administrative data. We're using the prior authorization use case as a tremendous point of burden in the industry to not only help us figure out how to improve that specific workflow aspect in healthcare, but also then to inform our work related to the larger convergence conversation. To help us advance the workflow discussions, the content was pivoted into a table format, enabling us to really get our arms around data categories and considerations related to the prior authorization use case. During the last call, Cheryl presented the table along with our colleague Josh Harvey from HCA, who's supporting us thanks to our task force member Jim's ability to recruit some staff to give us some additional support. That offline work is really providing us with an opportunity to get the detailed considerations from the task force members into the table and then enable us to not only add content but also comments. So what we're going to be doing in the next portion of this call is that Cheryl and Josh are going to walk us through a review of the feedback that we've received to date and then hopefully do some additional work to capture thoughts and considerations from the task force members. And then as we advance that work, we're going to start to fill out some additional tabs that you may have noticed that have been added into the workbook to help us with capturing our guiding principles and ideal state. You may recall from the last call that Cheryl talked about this ability to see kind of what we think is going to be the end goal, the documentation that we're going to look for to produce, to take back to the high-tech committee for their review and approval. So we want to not only be advancing the detailed table work, but we also want to be thinking about that end state so that we can have the processes meet in the middle. Cheryl, would you like to add anything else to the setup before we jump into the actual working portion of the call today?
No, I think you did a great job.
Thanks, Cheryl. So with that said, I'll turn it over to you and Josh to pull up the table and get us deep into the weeds, hopefully this afternoon, so that we can start to put some real shape to what it will mean to advance prior authorization.
Okay, wonderful. And Josh is going to be sharing his screen, which we'll show in a moment, the grid. And we also, I tried to take some of the comments that were made in the last meeting, particularly from those of you that had specific comments, to build them into some component on the grid. If I wasn't exactly sure where it was, if I did not see that you had gone in and edited it during the week. There wasn't a lot of edits to the grid itself, unfortunately. So I don't, that's one of the things you want to talk about. So can we make it so that Josh is sharing his screen? I see it in the little window, but I don't see it in the big one. All right, that's just going to take us a moment. There we go. Can everybody see that? Now, per our usual, if you don't mind raising your hand, and if you're on the call and you're not on the Adobe Connect meeting, you can just let us know when we have a pause if you have a question. One of the things we did in the last meeting, just to sort of restart this for those of you that haven't seen it, you can make it a little bit bigger if you click on the box to the right in your little Adobe Connect grid, so that way you can see it more clearly if you can't read it. I'm one of those, and there may be others, who I can't see it through my firewall, so I actually have it on my other machine so I can look at it while I'm looking at this and actually read it. But we had taken the picture and made it into data categories, if you recall from the last meeting, and we started talking about some of those data categories and the structure of the grid. So one of the hopes that we had was coming out of this is, you know, the goal to make the recommendations related to how can we reimagine prior authorizations. And I went into a little bit of a description of what would a reimagined prior auth be. And I only took one example where, you know, you go into a doctor's office and while you're in the office, you can get a response on whether or not something they're recommending is, you know, you're able to get it. And let's take the example of the wheelchair that we've already documented. What that would mean is that, you know, for whatever condition you're getting that for, I used the condition that, you know, you had surgery and you knew coming out of your hip surgery or your femur surgery that you would be in need of a wheelchair at least for a couple of months while you're recovering. So there's specific information that they would need in order for you to have that. And that's really what we're talking about, is we're talking about both the deliverers of the service, as well as those ordering the service, as well as the patient and the provider while you're in the visit, can actually get their service approved and know how much it's going to cost and be able to walk out of the office and know, all right, I'm going to have this surgery on such and such a date. I'm going to get a wheelchair when I leave, and I'm going to know that. And, you know, quite honestly, conversations with doctors don't go to that level today. So, you know, we're talking about removing burden, but I can tell you, as the example I presented in the case of my daughter, she didn't know she was going to need a wheelchair leaving the hospital, and it would have been nice to know that, because then we could have made other arrangements for her when she was coming out of the hospital. But, you know, in that case, it all goes to the physician knowing what going to be needed and communicating that, you know, to the patient, so everybody's knowledgeable at that point in time. But in that case, we looked at this grid and said, all right, well, there's a lot of information the physician would need to know. Some of it may be information that the provider of the wheelchair would need to know, and then information that the payer would need to know in order to provide that. And people gave examples, which I don't know if we actually even captured some of those, but things like there might be add-ons to the wheelchair that are necessary, or this, like in the case of my daughter who's small, she needed a smaller than normal adult-sized wheelchair. And they wouldn't know that if they didn't know her height or her weight or, you know, any of those things. So those are things that we talked about, you know, where would that be in the grid in terms of data category? Well, is that going to be information that's, you know, patient generated? Is it information that, you know, talks about, you know, the justification as to why the patient needs that information, or this is the additional information that we added sort of at the bottom where we were talking about the cost to the plan or the cost to the patient or who needs the information. And then we added some other indicators like metadata and process data, like what's needed in the process. So, you know, in looking at this, I couldn't look at this and say, oh, I know whether site of service, meaning where is the wheelchair going to be delivered or where is this visit taking place? You know, at the end of the day, is that something that's currently in the USCDI? Is that a structured piece of data that can be made available today? Who captures that data? These are the discussions that we kind of were looking to have to be able to look at all the standards that exist and say, is that something that's captured today? And is it captured where? So with that in mind, okay, this is just sort of a refresher of how all this works. Let's look at some of the groups of data categories like patient identity and patient demographics. I think for most of those, this is data that probably does exist in some place. Either within content standards or certainly within the USCDI, we said patient demographics exist. So, or are there emerging standards? I don't know the answers to all of those. You know, we said in this case, where if you go over to the right, we added that the provider would be providing that data. Certainly they collect it from the member, some of that information, and then not only does the provider act upon it, but also there'll be others that will act upon it. The deliverer of the wheelchair would need to act upon it. So I guess what I'm looking at is how do we get down to the standards that are needed and sort of looking at are we collecting or are we defining all the appropriate data categories? Like, how do we get to that next level to make this more meaningful for all of us so we can get to the recommendations? Because, again, this was the tool to try to get us there, and I'm not sure we're there yet. So I'm asking that question sort of the group, like can we have a little bit greater conversation around, you know, is there a problem with the way we structured this, or did you guys not see any additional data categories we needed to add, or do we need to add descriptions to these? Like, where do we go with this next to make this more meaningful for our work?
And sure, this is Lauren. Just really quickly, maybe we can ask Josh to, if it's possible, to zoom in, and maybe we can just kind of focus on a few columns or rows at a time.
Yeah.
If that'll help for the viewers at home. Thanks.
Yeah, because it's really
Absolutely.
Hard to see. I mean, if I didn't have my own copy up, I wouldn't really be able to see it, even with my glasses on. I mean, you can do a few things. I mean, everybody who's on the Adobe meeting, you can click on that little zoom in button, but then it's hard to figure out where everybody is because it cuts out half the picture. And you can make
Cheryl, one of the things you may not be seeing is that Gus Gerasi has his hand up.
Okay, Gus.
So I think, you know, in my view, you've captured all the broad categories, but when I've done projects like this before with folks, and it relates to data categories and then the specific data fields, things like patient identity, demographics, there's probably a dozen fields underneath that, and this may be out of complete ignorance, but are there standards for patient identity and demographics? because I've been involved in many long discussions about how many phone numbers do you keep for an individual or a person.
I think that if we, you know, my answer to that is, I know if you look at the USCDI list, there's definitely detail underneath those broader categories, and they may not be complete with what is required for prior authorization. So I do think we should, for some of these, to the extent that, you know, you folks believe, we need to drill down a little bit to say, you know, what's there and what is needed. And it may be different depending on what the type of prior authorization it is. Certainly you need one set of detail specifically for something like a wheelchair that might be quite different than what is needed for a prescription renewal. And that's generated some additional questions. So I am agreeing
yes.
with you, Gus. Not sure how we go to the next level. So I saw
you got two in the queue. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. I saw Jocelyn first, but then I saw see Sasha after that.
I just want to I want to reinforce. I think Jim's point. I think it's a really good one. I've been through this exercise in a couple of different areas around enrollment and prior authorization, sort of in a group setting, and I think we can spend a lot of time sort of getting the rows right. And I think that if we look at the rows as categories and not the nth level of detail, but just that there's a category that will then get unpacked by SNEs around that category, and then you look at populating the data that's in the cell itself of the table, I think that that's probably going to be, for the time that we have between now and September to progress this, that that's where we should put our effort is, sort of who does what at what level of maturity today around these categories is, I think, really what we need to understand, because otherwise we're going to end up with so much specificity without the taking the time to say what's the lens pullback of row, of category against standard, and be able to clearly see gaps where none of the standards do what we need them to do, or where hybrids of using a couple different standards or transactions that's within standards is really going to be able to get us to where we need to be.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right, let's go next to Sasha.
Oh, hi, this is Sasha. I had a similar, I think, feeling that it would be maybe useful to have a description of the categories so that we would fill it out with a consistent expectation. I, for example, am not entirely sure what type of data is envisioned for patient identity. Is it specific identifiers? In which case, to know if a particular system or standard expresses them, we'd need to know which identifiers, not just a broad category. And so while I don't know that it will be practical for this work group to get into very specific items, if we're trying to assess, you know, whether a specific demographic, like the patient's phone number, is going to be expressed in a particular standard like NCPDP, I think we're going to have to actually be more specific to do it with precision.
Okay, that's fair. All right.
So let me ask though then, Sasha, you really are talking about not only, you know, kind of building on Jocelyn's idea of getting to the standards that we think will meet us aspects of our data categories, but that also make sure that we're clear about what is the scope of the data category and its definition, but then also maybe there's not just that there's an answer like a standard exists, but also there's a maturity level that we need to be thinking about. And to, is that maybe something else that goes along with content standards to kind of give us that, you know, low, medium, high maturity level? Or am I going in a different direction than you were intending?
I wasn't really going the maturity direction. I would actually say
okay.
that should be out of scope for this work group to think about maturity. I think we should defer to other sources, maybe the ISA, for the assessment of like maturity or adoption of particular standards. Otherwise, we will we'll be working at this for a long time. And there's other groups that try to assess that. But I guess from my perspective, if we were to try to fill out this spreadsheet, some of the rows are more specific than others currently. And some of them, I think, we would, you know, I guess when I look at primary insurance plan, I think we could probably fill out that row with that level of specificity. But within patient demographics, if we mean any patient demographic, then we could probably put yes across the board. If we're really thinking there's 20 critical patient demographics, then to fill out this row, we have to list out what the 20 are and compare each of the 20 to each of these standards to say, you know, does X12 support previous address? Does NCPDP support previous address? Does fire support previous address? And so forth.
Yeah, that's very important. And that's going to be more important too, I think, as, you know, we look to what are the other standards and what are they currently using, because for patient identifiers, I think that's really the key. All right, let's see. I think there are a lot of hands raised now. Mm-hmm. I saw Denise next, and then
next is,
oh, is it Rich?
Yeah, I think it keeps it in the queue for you in order of how they were raised.
All right, great. Then Rich, you're next.
Yeah, thanks. I'm struggling a little bit, like others have voiced, about what level of detail we need to be at here, but specifically for the patient demographics, I think if we keep in mind that it's really a transaction that we're doing from the provider to the health plan, and it may simplify our lives considerably if we just make an explicit assumption that the provider will have done the HIPAA standard eligibility transaction, and whatever patient identification information the health plan needs, the provider will have already have obtained that both from the primary payer and the secondary payer, if any. So we just need to build into our model here a little bit of logic that makes that assumption, and possibly, you know, to assist the provider to know what identifier a particular health plan needs. But I think fundamentally a lot of the detail we can just kind of skirt the issue here if we make the assumption that the provider has current 278 information on file and that information is accurate from the payer or payers.
I like that because I think that that's something that currently exists that they would normally do. And it, again, it doesn't add anything on to the burden. Does that make sense to everyone else here? I mean, certainly weigh in on that. But thank you for that. Denise?
Hi. So I was going to just make a few comments. You know, we keep mentioning the USCDI as a standard, and it's really a standard of standards. And what it is a standard of is health data classes and constituent data elements for exchange. So if you go into the USCDI, I actually have a printed copy of it here in front of me. You know, if you look at patient demographics, it has 15 data elements under that data class. And when you look at the 15 data elements, some of them have associated standards with them, such as sex and birth, sex, and race. But the others don't. So, you know, I agree with the comment Sasha made that, you know, we do need to get to a level of granularity underneath some of these areas and that, you know, we should at least, and I think I heard this from some of the other folks that commented, that we should at least have, for instance, patient demographics, what are the demographics that typically the payer needs in most cases, and then start taking a look at where those elements exist within the various standards that are used, like NCPDP or so forth. But and then the other comment I was going to make is this is a really large group, and it seems like once we figure out how we want to flesh this spreadsheet out, that maybe we need to break off into some smaller groups to work on parts of it. Because I think it's going to be difficult for a group this large to do that as a group.
All right, that's a, definitely a suggestion. We can talk about that in a little bit because we've talked about, you know, what's the best way to go forward. And so let's hold on that note. I preserved it, and we'll come back to that. Arian?
Hey, thank you. So first of all, just as a correction, the 278 is indeed the prior authorization standard, but it's the 270-271 where you get the eligibility request response, which I agree probably should be a precondition for the rest of these flows. You know, I'll take maybe the controversial perspective that that where what we have right now is probably sufficient for the purpose that we're engaging in. We should be, you know, thoughtful about this information as you know, as primarily the broad-scale classes of information. To the extent possible, we probably should be aligning with U.S. CDI. But we're not the organization or the group that's going to define the standard or the data representations or the, you know, all of the details associated with conducting a prior authorization electronically. You know, I think we should be looking at making sure that we get a representation from DaVinci and other groups that have already done a lot of the legwork here and see where the state of the art is. And number two is look at the, you know, the policy enablers and the policy hooks that would be necessary to get broader scale pilot testing, use, and adoption of some of these transactions, and also to look at and make recommendations relative to policy gaps. So as a kind of point example, the 278 transaction was named by CMS as an EDI-based transaction, and you know, based on some of the guidance that CMS has given, they want to name, or they believe they have authority to name, only one standard. And so the DaVinci project built basically a Firebase wrapper around the 278 transaction, where there may be some recommendations on policy flexibility or other kinds of guidance about making a transition from a primarily EDI-based world to a world that is better served through Firebase transactions. So it's a long way of saying, you know, I think we've done a fair amount of work in looking at what data is required to, by each of the actors in the ecosystem. I'd suggest that before we get super detailed about each of the data and data classes, we do an evaluation of some of the work that's already been done. Look at the policy enablers, the policy hooks, and what's required of the ecosystem to get a broader scale robust pilot testing and broader scale rollout of these transactions. And maybe we can learn from, for example, the NCPDP experience in enabling EPA in the pharmacy space as we're thinking about EPA for DME. You know, look at best success patterns in rolling out electronic transactions with respect to kind of the workhorses that are already out there, like eligibility, claiming, and remittance. You know, put together a policy framework that goes along with some of the standards work that's already been done and do a needs assessment for where their gaps are. Because I feel like if we go through the nth degree of all of the data classes, we're doing work that other people are frankly better at and not leveraging the unique skill set of this particular task force.
Okay, thank you, Arian. I think you bring up a lot of fair points. And so maybe what we need to do again is sort of pivot to more of a, you know, needs assessment, as you've said, of, you know, where would we need to start in order to look at what some of the policy and standard recommendations are that we would have. Jocelyn, you had your hand raised again.
Hi, sorry. Yeah, I actually just made a comment. I agree with the points that Arian was making. And Arian was making, I think one of the things that would be important is to maybe in the columns get to a level of granularity about the particular transactions themselves. Because I do think that you're going to get workhorses like the 270, 271 depending on the rigor at which it's been implemented, you're going to get better quality data to answer some of these challenges, like is auth required from a really mature 271 that actually the payer is really supporting and building that content out, or the vendor that, you know, the clearinghouse for it has spent time and invested in that, versus, you know, a more generic wholesale clearinghouse 271 might not give you that result set, even though the capabilities that built into the transaction. And I think that gets to, you know, across these different standards bodies, the SDOs themselves, there's tools in each of them, and each of those tools do very different things well, with potential to do well. And I think that looking at not just the transactions, I think you also need to look at not in the policy sort of tools that we have, but also what are the blockers that have stopped them from being adopted to date. And as a frequent, you know, NCVHS listener, I think that we've heard from the industry on many occasions, you know, why we're not seeing the uplift that we would expect to see in the existing tool set.
Is that stunned silence or somebody speaking into mute?
Yeah, no, I was, this is Alex. I was trying to actually see if we lost audio.
I'm sorry. I think, Alex, you had something you wanted to say.
I did. I actually raise my hand and chime in here a little bit because I'm listening to some of the earlier comments. I've heard some guiding principles that have come out of what Jocelyn and Sasha and Arian have been saying. But at the same time, I've also been hearing we've got this table that's should really give us a big picture view. Let's not wade into the deep end of the pool like the standards bodies are doing, but try to keep this a high enough level so that this table can help tease out sort of the opportunities to improve the process. And so that might speak to Denise's point, which is that we might want to look at maybe if there are people who have a particular flavor or expertise who might want to be able to advance this table, maybe we could even make it like an offline small group that three or four people agree to go work on a particular aspect within the table as part of the homework. But I've also want to make sure that as we evolve the conversation, Cheryl, we start to capture on the new tab that we added, Guiding Principles and Ideal State, some of the things that we're hearing today, like deferring to the ISA for the maturity level, looking at, like Sasha brought up, and then Rich brought up the idea of eligibility transaction has been completed and identity of the patient is already confirmed. I think leverage, you know, Arian had one about leverage the work of others for the detailed standards work. And I think that's a great thing because we can come back and have maybe some demos or some presentations to help us really understand maybe how the standards that are evolving now can meet what we eventually define as our ideal state. And that may also help us with capturing something around the policy framework aspect that Arian brought up. So I think it's really neat to see us start to put some context to this table as you envision, Cheryl. Thank you. If you're talking, Cheryl, I'm not hearing you. I'm seeing the next person in the queue.
Sorry, Arian. I was on mute. Hey, John, can you go back to the Guiding Principles tab? Because there we did capture last week some of the points, patient at the center, the Arian, what you had mentioned, the definition of metrics that delight, levels of detail that are needed. Providers have information about what events require prior auth upfront or readily available. Information required for recommendation and decision making should be provided one time by the source whenever possible. And then we started talking about, again, what does the ideal state look like? Now, my ideal state that I'm describing doesn't necessarily mean to be the one we're going to recommend, but we should at least have a recommendation you know, as part of our paper that, you know, sort of depicts, and hopefully we can get a nice person on my group who's wonderful with pictures can maybe make a picture for us that we can utilize that will help depict what our ideal is looking like for some of those recommendations that, you know, we already talked about where we use existing eligibility efforts. Maybe we transition the EDI 278 to something that's more fire-based and then, you know, sort of depict that in either a picture or a cluster of pictures where, you know, we have a description of what we're looking for. But yeah, we're going to add to this guiding principles list, and I would love it if you guys went into this document and added additional detail. I did capture in my notes some of the things that you guys were saying today that I do think, you know, belong in this guiding principles that we're talking about. But sadly, you know, I'm not the standards expert. So I look at the data categories that we have back on the data categories tab and to complete some of those, you know, just farming out, for instance, patient identifiers, I'm assuming that we're going to be able to validate those through some of the eligibility transactions. And, you know, to me, this, I do think it's going to be a little bit of a struggle as we try to build this out. But so let's just look at that for 1 second. And I know that, Arian, you have a question, but if you can bear with me for a moment, what would it look like if we said, all right, let's assume the eligibility transaction occurs. We have that mentioned here in a couple of different places. So where would we capture that in our grid so that it can help us and help all of you understand, like, how would we update this? And I'm looking at this saying, is that part of patient identity? Would we include there the eligibility transactions, the 270, the 271? Or are we going to include that as part of, let's see, we have routing information, we have, that's not yet the approval or the request, beneficiary, so we're, benefits, all right, so that would be part of the benefits of primary and secondary, and then we have primary and secondary insurance plans, so with all of those four fields, which are in rows 12 through 15, we would, and then 10 through 15, those would all be confirmed basically through a 270 or a 271 is what I'm seeing. Are you guys sort of following me? I mean, I don't know, Josh, if that's something that we would put in under the X12 row, because those currently do exist. So you have to have the primary payer, secondary payer, primary insurance, and the benefits. Would those all be components of that 270, 271? Is that what we would want to put in there under the X12 column for those? And Arian, I know that's not why you raised your hand.
That oddly enough, that actually is at least one of the reasons why I raised my hand. And, you know, I'm really following on Jocelyn's question, but in some of these areas, we have transactions that are capable of sending a lot more information than they are and may not be. So if you look at the 271, for example, I believe that all it's required to send back is, yes, is eligible. And many 271s actually send back a fair amount of coverage and benefits information that goes that provides additional levels of specificity about benefit information. So at least one way to think about our task here is to follow the happy path, the ideal state, end state happy path, and then make some, you know, answer some questions about, well, what do we assume comes back in an eligibility transaction, whether it's a 270, 271, or some future FHIR-based world, well, I think we would know that I should be able to ask a benefits question. Is this patient covered? But is this also, is this patient covered for this benefit? Is this patient covered for this procedure? Which is a very different question from the questions that a 270, 271 is typically configured to answer. And if we follow back that path for the happy path, we should then be able to look at and do an environment survey on what information typically is returned, what information typically isn't returned, and what are the policy levers that we can make recommendations relative to improve a transition towards a more electronic world.
Okay. So if we were to take that thought and, all right, Jocelyn, I see you have a question. Why don't we go with your question first, and then we'll go with the thought.
Go I'm just going to say I think Arian's actually in my brain saying what I'm going to say out loud. So I think we have similar backgrounds, having worked sort of in the multi-payer environment around these transaction sets, and there's a tremendous amount of variability. And I think that ability to be able to understand what's possible, but what's likely, probable, what's happening in the market today, I think is important. But I really feel like, and I don't know if I'm being too presumptive here, I really feel like the concrete thing we can do is just get to another layer of column granularity and say, does it do it, does it not do it? So then we can start to take what are these cells and broadband understand where we have coverage from a transaction set perspective, sort of then at the SDO level, because that will show us where there's signs of light. And I'm biased, because I've spent a lot of time implementing these transaction sets in the market, to say, be able to say, I think we can grade them across a couple different vectors. I think we can say, how mature are they? Because that matters. I think we can say, you know, from independent sources, I think we can say, how much have they been adopted? Because something might be really mature and have low adoption, and why? And I think that we can do that with color coding, with footnotes, so that we'll create a picture, I think, that will inform sort of where could we go and make some of these policy decisions or challenge maybe some conventional wisdom about how we've been rolling out these transaction sets in the market today. And I never know if I've got my hand up or down, so let me see if I can figure out how to lower it. Okay.
Okay, I think that's those are all really good points. Any other questions before we try to make a path forward? I mean, does it make sense then to say, all right, if we normally would start with a patient presenting at the office and the doctor saying, yes, we need to do something, then does it make sense that we look at Rose, and I think Rich mentioned 8 to 13, should rely on the X12 270 to 271, except for number 9.
For medical, right. But yeah, that would have to for medical, not necessarily for pharmacy, so we'll have to think about that dynamic.
All right, so why don't we just add some descriptors then that say, you know, for the 271, and I'm not sure the best way to present this because it is going to get messy, but maybe that's what we need in order to say what's the best way to represent it. But if we said, all right, we would use for medical, we can use an M for medical, 270-271, and that would basically be there for all of those, 1 through 13. All right, and then, because that's what we're trying to define right now, patient demographics would not be there. All right, so we have eligibility. Let's assume we have some eligibility, and I put that in, Josh, because it does look like when I update it on my home computer, you can see it, so that's good. So we put that in, but at the end of the day, now that we know this person has eligibility, then we say, all right, well, what's the service that we're recommending for this person, and what do we need in order to justify that? Normally, there would be some sort of 278, which was the other transaction that was mentioned, which is the prior auth. So they need to know whether a 278 is required. So let's look at this data category list and say, all right, we're not 100% sure on the benefits because some of those might be there, some of them might not be there, but we're going to assume in our discussion that the benefit information is there, and one of the parking lot items would be that we need to, let's see, for the M270, 271, we want to ensure that detailed benefit information is provided to the provider with these transactions. So, you know, maybe today it isn't and it's all over the place, but maybe we want that to be one of our recommendations, is that information needs to be there. So then we need to say, all right, for this medical visit, we need to know where the visit's going to take place. I don't know, does that normally go in a 278 transaction? Do we normally include that information? Someone can tell us. Denise, you had your hand raised.
Denise,
no, are you on? Okay. Yeah, hey, this is Erin. I would say that 278 is so poorly penetrated that making speculation about what a 278 does or doesn't do is, at that stage, we should probably be looking at, you know, what is the transaction that we hope for do for us, whether it's a 278 or a Firebase transaction.
Okay, so then.
But definitely 278 would be the analog for the prior auth transaction.
Right, but what you're saying, though, if I'm hearing you right, is that what it includes is, again, not standard. And so we wouldn't necessarily, as part of that, be providing all this information. But
yeah,
again,
penetration of the 270 is very, very low.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what if we said then that per the recommendation, the color code, we would need the site of service. Now, I don't know how to add color to a field here in Google Doc. So somebody else will have to help us do that because I don't know how to do that.
Even if you just change the text, yeah, the color, even if you do that, that'll help. There you go.
Okay, so we would need site of service somehow in something, right? Because we need to know where, they need to know where this procedure or where the wheelchair is going to be delivered or whatever. So we need to know what the site of service is.
So, Cheryl, sometimes auths sort of unroll, right? So you might decide up front that you're going to go and figure out what needs an auth and get an auth in place, and you may not have all the specific information at the very beginning of a patient journey, but somebody in the office may be submitting a 278 or a proprietary request for an auth without that information, just to understand, does it need an auth or does it not need an auth, right? Sort of getting my ducks in a row, getting basic information and criteria, sort of starting the conversation. Because as Arian described, typically what the 278 today does is submit and starts the process, and all that analog information that ideally would be in a 275 big blob of, you know, data that's required, the sidecar to support the 278, would then carry a lot of that sort of more detailed contextual clinical information about the patient. But what happens typically today is somebody submits via the 278, and then that starts an offline discussion with supplemental information that will then build out and get to completeness and a final determination.
Okay.
And there's a lot of sort of proprietary things that have been sort of put on top or around from a UI perspective, that 278 submission, to enable that to get to the specificity that varies from payer to payer.
So with the struggle with the 278, so again, thinking about our future goal, which is we go into the office and we can get an answer, you know, about a prior auth while we're there. Would we be wanting not just the 278, but a transaction, some type of Firebase transaction, to allow the provider to provide more of this information up front so he can get a more answer back that he can count on. So that's what we're saying, right? So we would say, would our goal then be that we want to move, which I heard, from FIRE, from 278 to a FIRE-based transaction if possible, which would require a policy change. And then that FIRE request would include more information for the payer so that the approval can come more immediately, right? That's what we're all hoping for.
So I would maybe refine what you're doing into two steps. I think the first step we need to do, which is to understand what's out there today. And I think what you're sliding into is solutioning what we could do. And I think that there's a number of potential solutions that are in the market. I happen to have gotten to spend time on what we do on the NCPDP front, right, because I brought the draft standard live. And so we use the 271 there. We use the SCRIPT standard, which is NCPDP's EPA standard. And then there's sort of conversations about what we could do to augment that with better clinical data and to make it happen in more in a real-time basis. That's sort of the pharmacy side of the house. On the medical side of the house, as Arian described, typically we're doing a lot of submits with the 278 with a pend and then a determination maybe after the fact, but some chattiness that happens offline without. And we're seeing automation for the 278 for the volumes that are happening, and we're seeing proprietary solutions. We're doing work over on the DaVinci front, another project I get to work on, where we're really proposing alternate ways to be able to expose that information that you would get via a 271 today to get to that really patient-specific scenario. I think that Arian so eloquently described sort of what you really need sort of in workflow for a provider to really understand patient-specific benefits, leveraging the tools that come with FHIR and the ability to get in workflow. Up into being able to actually submit the 278, I think that's a decision or a recommendation that we would make as a group once we gave everybody on this group the opportunity to really understand what's sort of out there in the market today. But I think if we can sort of capture, and maybe we take the next time between now and the next meeting to really flesh out sort of what are the standards, what capabilities do they have, so then we can then make recommendations to say, who do we want to have come show and tell what some of these capabilities are, or what do we want to dredge up from prior testimony to share with this group so everybody can sort of get on the same page. I think that would be helpful. So we're all sort of operating with the same knowledge, because I feel like I'm a little lopsided because I live and breathe this stuff day to day, and I know that there are folks on the call that just aren't as familiar with some of the terminology that was thrown around.
I would agree with you there. I definitely think that we're all in a slightly different places coming from different points of view, and I do like that suggestion, and I know that our support group at ONC and others have put together some info that we can share with this group. I know we shared links to it, but it may require us to deep dive into some of the existing current affairs of prior auth in order for us to, you know, really get to where we want to be with recommendations. So thank you for that. And Arian, I see you have your hand raised again.
Yeah, I think Jocelyn mentioned the 275 transaction, which is a claims attachment transaction, which actually is getting some reasonable support. And it suggests that at some point we may be in this hybrid world where we've automated coverage discovery, but rely on, you know, attaching a variety of information that could include a consolidated CDA or new equivalent thereof, along with, you know, some traditional paper-based and letter of medical necessity-based attachments. And all that's by way of saying that I agree we should do a current state assessment, but also define a transitional path from where we are to the future, the future happy state, taking advantage of a lot of the work that's already been done and up and running in some of these areas. And so, again, getting better awareness about what's there, what works relatively universally, what works incredibly clumsily, like the 278 workflows, that were just described and what's starting to emerge as a working practice, like a 275-based claims attachment. And I also think getting a lay of the land from DaVinci in terms of the coverage discovery work that's been done, as well as some of the assumptions that have been done around the prior auth work in DaVinci would also be really helpful for this group.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask a question then, Jocelyn. Who would you recommend we could reach out to from a coverage discovery point of view to start with at DaVinci? I know you bring a lot of that expertise yourself, but it sounds like
the... No, I think it would be good to have somebody from the team. Let me talk to the PMO team offline and figure out who makes the most sense. I think what we're probably going to talk about is whether or not we want to have somebody from the actual project team, or whether we want to have maybe somebody who's actively implementing it that already owns other off workflows, you know, have one of our members that's an early adopter come and talk versus having one of us from the project team give an update. So let me talk to the team and figure out who makes the most sense.
I think an early adopter would be great because they can then bring forward, you know, what their experience is, and that can help inform us into, are there even additional things we need to consider? So,
and I think we've got one member I'm thinking of that is actually adopting, also working with their clearinghouse vendor, and has, you know, real-time 278 transaction content in production today. So I think what's really important there is understanding, I think, and again, Ari and I think I are on a similar vein here, is, you know, there's swim lanes of activity here, and we've got progress, and we want to continue to move people forward using the tools that they're using, and then create space where we can for people to innovate and do better. And I think that being able to understand not just the technical reasons why people are making these decisions, but the business drivers, and sort of the changing relationships between payers and providers that are allowing those changing behaviors and changing conversations to happen, I think it's a really great overtone as we look at real-world recommendations.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I just want to take a little time check in terms of where we are. We have until about 10 after 4 when Alex was going to go over next steps. So we have at least another 10 minutes where we can be talking about the grid or answering any questions if folks have additional questions. So are there other questions out there? The other thing that both Arian brought up and others was the also understanding maybe some other current states. And we talked about DaVinci and what DaVinci's doing. But again, there has been some material that was shared in either the first or the second meeting with a lot of links to current events that are going on related to the state of prior authorizations. And there are a lot of different groups who are doing different things. AHIP has a pilot that's going on, and I know Anthem's participating in that. There are other groups that are doing activities. They mentioned PDP for prescription drugs. So does it make sense for us to review some of these materials in this meeting? Would that be helpful to the group before and sort of take a pause from our in the group deep dive on this spreadsheet? Would that help us to get that to the next level of where we need to kind of go with this? Is that what I'm hearing from folks? Can a few people respond to that recommendation? I don't see any hands raised right now, but I just...
Well,
this is Alex.
I mean, go ahead.
Thank you, Jocelyn. I see Arian also raised his hand. And for me, I'm feeling like we were just starting to get some mojo around the table and some guiding principles. I think Arian, whether he realizes it or not, has been giving us lots of guiding principles throughout his chat and public comment or the comments he's been making. And so I feel like getting our arms around the data the categories, where some standards exist, and populating out those guiding principles will start to help us kind of work at the two ends of the book to try to get to the middle, to that sort of what's today, what's aspirational, and where that's transitional plan really is going to need to be, and as a part of our recommendations. So that's just my initial reaction, and I see you have some others in the queue, Cheryl.
Thank you, Alice, and I appreciate that. All right, so let's go to Arian next.
Hey, yeah, so thank you. You know, I actually tend to agree. I would recommend that we take some time and articulate the future state, you know, sort of the ideal state, maybe take a little more time with this grid articulating in that future state what has to be true, what do you have to assume to be true in terms of the information flows, and then kind of armed, and but not go down to the end, not go down to the nitty-gritty detail about, well, what's the standard for identity and where is a benefits number carried, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Just you know, with the assumption that we have coverage information for the patient, we know that this patient requires that this procedure requires prior auth, et cetera. And then armed with that future state vision and enough view on some of the informational assumptions, then we do the current state survey on, you know, what's there and what are folks at DaVinci working on, get a perspective on where the policy and technology and business model obstacles are, and then armed with those two, then start to draft recommendations. And maybe you guys are the masters of the calendar, but maybe we could spend a couple more sessions on future state back, do a current state survey, and then circle back around and draft some policy recommendations.
Thank you. I think that's a great suggestion, Arian, and appreciate your help in getting us there. All right, Richard?
Yeah, I would also be reluctant to stop work on our grid because I think that's important, and we've got some, we've learned a lot today, so I'd keep going forward with that. But I very much like Cheryl's suggestion about let's take a look and see what else is out there, and both for helping us define our vision, what does the happy path look like when we get to the end of it, but also referencing it to the grid, if there are pieces of our grid where as we look around the industry and we see these various projects going on, if those projects have solved or have a decent, viable theory for solving some of the components within our grid, then we can just plug those components into the grid, and we, in this group, don't have to sweat nearly as much of the detail within in those categories as we otherwise would. So that's the way I see us going forward in you know, two prongs there. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Let me just come back to here. All right, so I don't see any more hands raised. So what I just heard was it would be helpful to the team if we have some more definition for data categories. So that's going to be one of the assignments we have, populating more of the guiding principles so we have more data around, you know, how we're working on all of this and really the guiding principles around prior authorization, if you will. And then a description of the desired happy path. And of course, in reference to what is currently a path from where we are today to there. So in order to support that happy path, we then need to have some view of the current state assessment, which we will need in our paper as well, with a recommendation of how to get from the current state to the desired happy path. And it may be slightly different for each different type of prior authorization that we already talked about. There might be one path that we're going to recommend for medical, and that might be different from pharmacy, which might be different from durable medical equipment, you know, which might be different from whatever else we haven't thought of. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think what would be helpful, I think, for us, for our next steps, would be for folks to volunteer to go out here and help us build out the guiding principles and even defining the categories. Yes, we put these categories out here, but again, we're not the, you know, hopefully we're not owning it ourselves. I'd be happy to have people go out and provide a definition as you see it of what the different categories are and whether we need to divide that up and conquer. Maybe we can get two or three people to sign up to help define the data categories, and then a couple people to sign up to volunteer to build out the guiding principles, and maybe a couple more people who are willing to take on the description of the future state, because, you know, it's not the future state according to Cheryl, although, you know, I love the world according to Cheryl. I don't live in the world by myself, so I realize that it's better to share that with others, because also then, you know, for me, I've learned so much. I don't know everything about this. I only have a limited viewpoint. I don't even work in the prior auth area within Anthem, so everything I get, I have to get from other people. You know, what I understand is data sharing, and that's my background. So it's really helpful to me to hear what you guys have to say. So could, with that in mind, could I ask the team to sign up and take a topic and be willing to do that work between now and next week? So when next week when we come back, we can have some population of all these different topics. And then also, we already have some materials with the current state, and perhaps we can come back with some of that information at a future meeting, and then, you know, talk about what we would want to incorporate, you know, in our final paper relative to that current state. Because, again, it is important that we're able to describe in a narrative and or pictures how we're going to take what the current state is and move to that future happy picture. So would I be able to get some volunteers from this group to take on some of these topics? Don't all jump up at once. And if you want, you can put it in the chat or...
Yeah, I'm happy to volunteer for whatever you want me to whatever you want to throw me at.
I like your guiding principles. So I would say, Arian, if you have more guiding principles, I would love to see you in that space, if you wouldn't mind help building some more of those out, because you've been really helpful in that space already.
Happy to do. Thanks.
All right.
Okay, so I just heard Arian get put in a guiding principles group. I heard Jocelyn, or I saw Jocelyn raise her hand in the comment box for the table work. So I'm just capturing a few things. People are,
and I'm happy to review the draft guiding principles as well. This is Jocelyn.
Yeah, because what I'm thinking, you know, I'm hoping that this week we'll also get everybody's access issues to the table resolved, which I think might have impacted people's commenting. So I think that if we can give some people up, if they can volunteer to focus in a guiding principles or in a advancing the table, that may give us some substantive commentary to review during the next call, because where I really am I'm thinking what we're going to focus on is that guiding principles and ideal state in one vein that will enable us to sort of marry it up so we know who we have to what we have to understand about the current state so that we can start to think about the happy path and the, ultimately the recommendations. So I think we're starting to get people to so we have a happy place. So I'm going to, Cheryl, do we want the guiding principles and ideal state to be in one path? Or I think they kind of go hand in hand in my idea, but I just want to make sure as you were going through your vision, I understood if you had ideal state and guiding principles all as one work group.
Yeah, I think that makes sense because, you know, at the end of the day, That's what's going to get us to the future. So I agree with that 100%.
Okay,
can
so
I,
Arian
can I
and Alex.
Can I volunteer? Sorry, Alex. Can I volunteer Tom to join the conversation about guiding principles of future state, given the work
you're talking
about
Tom Mason?
Burn reduction? Yes, Dr. Mason, please. We'll introduce him.
Yeah, and Doug, in all fairness, he's not on the call today. So in all fairness, we'll take it back. But, you know, we'll hopefully he'll have the bandwidth to do it. So I want to capture, so Alexis, you're in the happy path, guiding principles. Anil, do you have a, okay, so you're going to be in that group as well. I'm going to call that the happy path table. And I'm going to, so happy path and table are the two groups. And Ram, I'm not sure if you're just commenting or you're volunteering for a group.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about that.
Yeah, this is Ram here. I can volunteer for a group, but just was wondering because as I hear through the whole conversation, I think there are some issues of you mentioned current state and the future state and how do you get there. So in terms of you know, there's a lot of technologies plus policies. It is a two-axis thing, or a multi-axis in a sense. So both there are both technologies and policies that need to be put into place to make that happen. Sorry. So mm-hmm. I don't know. Depends on what how this fits into your framework. I'll be glad to volunteer.
It sounds to me like you're naturally moving towards the Happy Path group because I really do feel there's guiding principles to ideal state that gets you sort of thinking about some of the stuff in between. So Jocelyn is over by herself on the table work. Anybody willing to join Jocelyn over there?
Yeah, I'm going to volunteer to help do some of the definitions of the data categories, although I will say, you know, I took them out of the picture, so I may not do them justice, but I'm willing to do that if someone else might want to help do that as well.
Actually, maybe Justin, I can volunteer for that then. Ram,
perfect. Thank you, Ram.
So you're going to work on the table. Thank you, Ram.
Yeah, Ram, we can definitely send you sort of presentations we've done too, and we've got really good details about how this fits in and how DaVinci coexists with X12. We've been working really closely with the team over at X12 to make it work. So I think that'd be good background to get sort of some independent eyes in it on those diagrams
okay.
as well.
That'll be great. Plus, we have some other views on the fire and things like that, so I can talk to you about that. Okay.
Awesome. And we haven't said the word blockchain once during any of these meetings. I'm just going to say that out loud.
Okay. All right. So Joshua and Ram I have on the table, Arian, Alexis, Anil, and Tom Mason, who's been voluntold on the happy path, which is a larger bucket.
And this is Josh. I'd love to stay involved in the table work if possible. I've got some ideas, kind of distilling some of the comments from Arian and Jocelyn and Sasha as well today that I think I've got some ideas on how we can incorporate some of that and find a happy medium in terms of how much detail we call out with the goal of identifying real policy levers that could be used to affect change.
That'd be awesome, Josh. And it looks like Alexis indicated that Jim may have had to leave the call, so that he may also want to continue with this because he was really very energetic and did a lot of the early work along with you, Josh. So I think we can add him to that group. And then I think if we've got two groups, what I'm thinking is that over the next week, the people that have volunteered will go into the into the Google Doc and start to really massage the content on those worksheets. And if they want to get a call together, certainly can do so. If you need assistance, please reach out to us. I suspect all of you have email and meeting platforms, and it may just be easier to sort of just collaborate together or to do it asynchronously. But that gives us, you know, four or five people on each team that can do some substantive modifications to the content that we've already developed and that'll give us some really good discussion points for the next call. This has been a really robust discussion, and I'm trying to sort of wrap us up here because we're about to head into a public comments in a couple of minutes. I think where we're at is that we've gotten people to raise their hands to dive in on the homework of modifying the spreadsheet for the applicable tab that they signed up for. That sign up does not preclude anybody else. Actually, we invite all of you to, including myself, to update that worksheet with your thoughts and check in on it over the next week or two. Before next week or so while we advance it, and then we will regroup next Tuesday and do a deep dive on reviewing it. But one of the things that we did want to ask about that we haven't discussed so far, and Cheryl, I'm not sure if we still think this is on point for today. Can you back up on the slide, please? We wanted to talk about whether we needed to look at different use cases. Would you like to punt on that conversation today since we've got the other game plan in motion?
Yeah, I think let's hold that off a week, and then we can come back to it after we see where we are next week.
Awesome. I agree with that. And with no further ado, let's pivot to the public comment slide, please.
Great. And can we ask the operator to open the public line?
If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Thank you, operator. Any comments in the queue?
There seems to be no comments at this time.
Okay. Alex and Cheryl, we'll let you know if we get any other comments before we wrap up.
Thank you. So, Alex, do you want to take it back?
Sure, because I think we're sort of at this point where I think we've sort of recapped already, but I'll just go run through it again. The next steps are to get the data categories defined. That the table team will work on that with Cheryl, as well as building out some of the other standards information that'll help us start to get ourselves wrapped around at a high level what standards are at play, but we're not going to take any really deep dives. We're going to assume those deep dives will be done elsewhere. We're going to capture our ideal happy path, which will be underpinned by guiding principles. So that happy path group will start to populate that worksheet tab. And along the way, we may start to also capture some current state assessments, but I suspect that'll really come out of the next couple of weeks after we get this next real update to the table. And that as we have a more populated table of the prior authorization content and the happy path state, we can start to look at really understanding that current state to transitional state, which will help us to really get towards those draft recommendations. Along the way, we think we're going to want to get some demonstrations, and Jocelyn will reach out to her community in DaVinci and look at what implementer member may have the bandwidth and interest to come present to this community, this task force, at some point in the near, not so distant future, ETA to be determined. I think those are sort of the key points of the recap. If I missed anything, Jocelyn is saying we should have an EPA demo with pharmacy as well. I know Margaret Weicker is also on this call. I know, Jocelyn, you play in NCPDP land. So if you guys have any ideas about who we could get an EPA demo from, that would be fabulous. You both have my email, or you can let us know if you've had any thoughts specifically about that. At this point, are there any other public comments we should be mindful of, or are we ready to continue with the wrap-up, Lauren?
Operator, did we get any more comments in?
There are no comments at this time.
Okay. I think that's it, and we can probably start to wrap. If Cheryl didn't have anything else?
Yeah, I did want to add one thing. I added another tab to the spreadsheet, which is recommendations, and I do think as we are starting to build out this both the happy path and the guiding principles, and as well as the rest of the grid, if there are things that you want to start to at least capture in the form of what a potential recommendation would be, certainly put them out there, and we'll start looking at those as well. And those can sort of be used as an outline as we go in the future, because I just don't want to lose anything. You know, we can always evaluate it as a group and then, you know, determine where we are. But if there's something you want to put down just because you don't want to lose the thought, be happy to, you know, add it to the list.
Okay. If there's nothing else, Alex, anything from your end?
I don't think so. I think we got some good mind meld on the call. We got some homework assignments. Some people got some voluntolds. I think it's a normal meeting. So I think this is good.
Sounds great.
Thanks, everybody.
Okay.
Thank
we'll
you.
Talk
Have
again
a
next
fabulous
week.
Day.
Thank
Stay
you.
Well.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.